Overnight, it's been reported at least one person traveling from India has tested positive for COVID-19. The National Institute for Communicable Diseases has said it continues to monitor COVID trends both nationally and abroad. They haven't yet detected the B.1.617 coronavirus variant. What does this all mean for us going forward? Professor Adrian Piren is the acting director of the NICD and joins us now on the line. Professor Piren, welcome to our program. Thank you for your time this morning.
Good morning, Bogani, and morning to your listeners. Thank you for the opportunity.
Firstly, can you confirm if indeed a person traveling from India has tested positive for COVID-19 in South Africa?
Yes, that is the one case that we are aware of. I think there are probably some other cases that are being investigated, but at this time, that is the only case that I'm aware of that is under investigation in terms of being confirmed and from India, and that the sequencing results, I think, will probably be released probably later in this week to confirm whether or not it is circulating, or one of the major circulating variants that is seen in India.
In all likelihood, then, the B.1.617, the variant first detected in India, is here?
It is a possibility, but as you know, when we look at all the other variants, and there are lots of other variants in circulation, that it may well be inevitable, possibly, that variants will reach our shores, as our variant reach other shores as well because of travel.
How contagious is it, and how deadly is that variant?
So that's a very difficult question. I think that they are still some outstanding questions. So I think it is a variant of concern, as the WHO calls it, and it's a variant of concern because the mutations that are observed, and it's not just two mutations, in fact there are several other mutations, but two of concern are the ones that are linked to increased transmissibility, and the other in terms of immune evasion. So as you know, in South Africa we have a dominant circulating variant that in fact avoids immune responses and has also been linked to high levels of transmission. So I think that's the concern with the variant that has been recognized, at least the one variant from India of concern that has been recognized to have those types of properties. And you've seen the events in India,
yeah.
But again, I think it's a constellation of things. It's not just the variant itself, but possibly increased mobility, congregate events, super spreader events, lack of application of the non-pharmaceutical interventions that have all led to what's currently being observed in India. And so I think we can't just pin it down to the variant itself, given that we don't have all the evidence to say that it is the case. But coming back to your point, what does that mean for South Africa? So again, it's really important that we have systems, and we do have systems in place to monitor four variants, so that we need to keep that in place in order to ensure that we are able to act appropriately. But our actions are not really any different to any other action of identifying an individual that is infected with COVID-19. In other words, it's really critical for us to have a track and trace and quarantine process activated in order to ensure that we have a reduced transmission. I think what is important, of course, is if these variants have higher transmissibility and are able to evade immune responses.
Look, the concern is, and I know you're saying that the number of factors to be considered here, but if you look at the storm that is raging in India, and you can take any number of ways to dice their figures, but an average of 300,000 cases for the last 12 days, some are pegging it at 8 million new cases since the end of March. That would indicate a high degree of transmissibility. And therefore, when it comes to how we respond, there are people who are calling for flights from India to be banned. Do you agree with that?
I don't have a particular set position on it. I think we need to determine what the implications are. Can we manage flights coming in terms of people arriving? In other words, just as the UK did when the variant from South Africa was recognized, that is to try and control incoming flights. But as you know, that variant that was originally identified in South Africa is in circulation in the UK. And what they did there, and are still doing in fact, is really to try and limit the actual spread of that by having, again, an approach, a geographic approach to try and isolate to do the tracing, to do the testing in order to limit transmission as best as possible.
That
would, as you know, the variant is in other countries as well.
It is inevitable, I understand. It is inevitable that these variants will reach all over the world. That's why we keep saying until all of us are safe, none of us are. But in the immediate term, we have hardly vaccinated everyone in South Africa. We haven't even reached through all the health workers. We haven't even completed that implementation study. Surely, if we're seeing this raging storm in India, one of the first things to do in limiting how it will affect us is to think about flights that are coming from India. Other countries are already doing this. Countries in Southeast Asia who are a lot closer to India, why aren't we doing it?
Yes, I'm sure there will be marked discussions and debate as to how to manage this. I'm sure there will be announcements, I think, fairly soon as to how to manage this, either, as you said, to have either a restriction in terms of flights or stop flights from India. But again, as you know, there are other routes and other flights that could possibly lead to the introduction of this particular variant. So it's not going to be that straightforward by saying stop all flights from India, because, you know, there are other ways and other flights that are coming in that may well lead to the importation of this particular variant.
In other words, it's a losing battle, right? I mean, it sounds like a clever idea to say stop flights, but really the thing is, all these variants move around the world. They mutate in different places. There's no defense against this until we're all vaccinated.
Yes, I think that is, I suppose, the ultimate, but I think we need to make sure that our systems are in place for detection. I think that's really critical. So not all variants are of concern. It's those variants that lead to higher transmissibility, immune evasion, that are really of concern, and managing those. So having those systems in place, I think, is really important.
All right. We're talking now, obviously, about the potential third wave. It's anticipated to hit Gauteng the hardest. Why is that guess being made, particularly for Gauteng? And when do you think the third wave will hit?
Well, I'd let me deal with your first question, I think, is when will it hit? I think we're all really keen to know that. And unfortunately, models are not, or this particular model is not really geared or designed to answer that specific question. I think what we will have to do is to really then monitor quite carefully the various dashboards and the modeling dashboards to give us a sense. There are some metrics that allow us to say that, yes, when we look at the upticks and upswings that we're entering into a third wave, and I think the Department of Health then will declare that. But I think it's really difficult for us to really predict that. Why Gauteng? Again, that's really a complex question. Is it because of the high level and density of our situation? Will that contribute? It's thought that may well contribute to that. Also, possibly the levels of immunity again. So when you look at the models take into account various factors, including levels of immunity. And the data that we have shows possibly that in Gauteng there may be lower levels of immunity, and that may well contribute to possibly an outlier compared to other provinces. In other words, we'll have a sharper peak compared to the other provinces.
But obviously it's going to be important to monitor not only what is happening in South Africa, but particularly, of course, cases from elsewhere, to just make sure we're on top of which variants are detected in South Africa and what risk they pose to us.
Yeah, so I think, you know, coming back to you, that's a very important point. But I think also, you know, in South Africa, we have a model or models. And again, the models just paint particular scenarios, but things can change, in other words. So again, coming back to the fact that the so-called non-pharmaceutical intervention, that is the physical distancing, the wearing of masks, hand hygiene, the managing of business places in terms of the numbers of people that can access it, ventilation, these are all really key components, the risk communication. These are all key components for us to try and manage and try and limit the resurgence that we may well see. And as you can see, the models give you a range. In other words, if you do not have non-pharmaceutical interventions, then you may well approach, for example, the second wave, if not get worse, as well as the opposite way. So again, we reinforce the messages around the non-pharmaceutical interventions. We can actually have a lower resurgence, and that's clearly defined in the model. So I don't think it's really a one or the other. I think it's really how we approach it in terms of managing future resurgences.
Professor Adrian Perrin. Professor Adrian Perrin, appreciate your time. The Acting Director at the National Institute of Communicable Diseases.